Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Minus Steve Barish. I know I'm missing one of my sidekicks. Buddy showed up on time, but I don't know where Steve went. I guess he's not on a train out here yet. He'll be coming out here soon. And, of course, tonight's what we call the Big Show night, where we do the Larry King of Radio at Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. That'll start at 11 o'clock and go till 2 Pacific time. That's going to be a heck of a show. You can catch that on your local radio station, or whatever you do in your car or whatever. Go to Coast AM and .com and then just click on it, and it'll show you what in your area, what depending on if Canada, U.S., Guam, Virgin Islands, all these different places where that show goes, you'll be able to listen to it. And we're going to the topic tonight with George Norrie is going to be this book, The Inside Track. And we're really going to cover it very, very thoroughly. You can bet on that. So there's a lot of stuff in here that we've never mentioned on this show. And it will be mentioned on that show. And there's been a bit of resistance to keep this out of there. Are you there, Steve?
I am, sir.
Huh?
Yes, I am. I'm coming back from Buffalo, so...
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, you're Buffalo. I guess now, Buddy Boo was almost late, but I knew if Buddy Boo made it, you'd make it eventually. I was telling you, were you listening to the show, or you couldn't hear it, right? Because you can listen to this on your cell phone, by the way. Those of you that have cell phones out there, just go to bbsradio.com and click on something, and it goes to your cell phone. I don't know whether you type your number in or what you do. It doesn't cost anything.
Wow, that's beautiful.
The Coast to Coast AM has it, too. Time I get, I'm doing a 3-hour show with George Norrie tonight.
Yes.
On Coast to Coast, but I think it'll be past your bedtime because this starts at 11
no,
o'clock
I,
out here.
I'm going to be listening to tonight. I'm off tomorrow, so it'll be great listening to you on George Norrie because he really likes you.
He really enjoys you. Go on the website and find out which radio station is closest to you. We have a KFI 640 on the dial out here in Southern California.
Right,
that's
where I always
listen to it at. So,
yeah,
it varies,
I have 1180 in Rochester here, so it's a very well listened to radio program in Rochester. So I'm looking forward to hearing you tonight.
Yeah, and then it'll rerun again. They do a rerun usually a couple of hours late. Actually, the show ends. They do some news and stuff, and then they rerun it so that it runs a second time on the East Coast, starting at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
That's about the time you'll be going to bed. You ought to try to call in if you can, see what happens.
Oh, that'd be fun.
You know, it's hard to call into that show. I only got in once or twice in the whole history of it when I had something to share with Art or George or somebody when I wasn't actually a guest.
Right, right.
But so George, what's happening up in Buffalo?
Well, I'm doing oxygen therapy.
And busy in Buffalo today?
Pardon?
What's been happening up in Buffalo?
Well, I'm going to, I'm doing oxygen therapy.
Oh, cool. How's that going? Tell me about that.
Well, it seems to be pretty good, Fred. What they're doing is it lasts between 30 and 60 days. I would say it's probably more 60 days.
Yeah.
And you build up a lot of oxygen in the body, and it kills all the pathogens. And, you know, I have a little cancer left because they had to stop the operation, but I hope that by the time that they do an MRI on the 17th, that it's all gone.
Oh, good.
So I'm looking forward to that. I thought it's the only place within three states that I know of that does oxygen therapy. So I really wanted to hop on that and take care of that as much as I possibly can.
You have to wear an oxygen mask?
No, it's intravenous, Fred. Goes right into your
vein. A little IV oxygen, huh?
Yeah, they take 2 pints of blood out, and then they put the oxygen in with the blood, and they move it up and down very slowly, and the blood goes from very dark red to very bright red, and then they put it back in your body.
Goes to a bright red?
Yes, it goes right to bright red. And I feel tired the next day. That's why I'm taking off tomorrow.
Oh,
but,
cool.
It
in other words,
it's
a new way to get high. It's a legal high.
Yeah, yeah. There's three of us that sometimes go up, but I went up alone today. So it doesn't take too long to do, but you know, it's an hour and 15 minutes up and an hour and 15 minutes back to Rochester. So
oh, excellent.
Yeah, but it's cool, Fred. You know, I'm always interested. I like to stay on the cutting edge of things, you know, so that's what
I'm
doing.
Have you been doing all week anyway? How's the energy been?
Energy's been really fantastic. I'm not doing anything new other than when I put my hands on people, Fred, the energy is so powerful that the spines, I can actually see the spines and the darkness coming out of the spine. So I'm not sure what's happening other than it's clearing out. And also, I lent my gold receptor to a young lady who needed it very bad. She has Crohn's disease. And
yeah.
Watching the energy coming out of both legs when I was touching her her tummy. And so I presume that it's moving a lot out. And she says, this is really interesting, Fred. She says, I'm really learning from this necklace. This necklace is alive, and it's teaching me. And so she's really having a good time with it. And I'm going to be, she's had it for 2 weeks. I wear it when I can get it back from her, but I'm getting it back totally tomorrow. So it's really a lot of fun for her. I wore it last Thursday, you know, and Saturday, then I give it back to her.
Well, that's
but she's,
cool.
She's a fantastic young lady, and she's...
How old is she, anyway?
She's 25. She's 25, and she just got married, and I've been working with her with the Crohn's, so...
Yeah,
the energy is clearing. It just takes a long time, you know, with Crohn's.
Yeah, that's pretty young to be getting that.
Yeah, she's, I don't even know where she got it. It doesn't even run in her family. I mean, it just, for some odd reason, she's got Crohn's, and she's going to Switzerland. She's got some wonderful work done in Switzerland.
Yeah.
But, she loves my work, really a lot, and she comes back to me, and she feels better for about 2 weeks, and then she comes back and she needs it again. So, whatever I'm doing, I'm helping her as much as
Have you talked to her about her diet?
That's what I talked to her. Yes, that's what I talked to her about. And I said, you know, if you're taking in any kind of bread or you're taking in sugars or you're taking in meat, you really got to stop because it's not really that good for you. And so she's trying. You know, she's young. She's 25. You know,
yeah, she should be, you know, soups are good, those kind of things. Like stuff, like food, you know.
Yes, yes. And she's a one, she's thinking about coming with me to California.
Oh, that'll be nice. She's going
to
be
happy. Yeah, she would like to be.
Got your room already. They already turned the sheets down already.
Oh, cool. Wonderful. So we're thinking about, you know, just having a good time. She wants to go to Beverly Hills and see all the houses and Rodeo Drive. You know, she's a kid, so she wants to see all this stuff. So she's my, Chris is my one of my best friends. And I've known this child since, she's 25. I've known her since she's been about 9 years old. So she's like a daughter, you know, that kind of thing. She's really a nice kid. Really, really nice.
You work or what?
No, sure. Her tummy doesn't really do well, and her father helps her out a lot. So, very, very good family. Very, very sweet people. And she's very bright. She went to University of Rochester. Her sister just graduated University of Rochester. So she's very bright. Very, very bright young lady.
What's she get a degree in anyway?
Business. Yes.
That's good.
So her sister's doing the same thing, and I think she wants to get her master's, but I don't know where she wants to get her master's at.
Oh, cool.
But you know, it's a lot of fun knowing some really sweet people, and you know, very, very nice people. So that's what I'm going to be doing. That's what I'm going to be doing. She might help me to fly there.
Oh, you might
that's
fly out.
Yeah, she's she wants me to fly. So
oh,
she
okay.
said, I will go with you.
You think you might do that?
I'm trying to get into a plane, but honest to goodness, it's my only fear that I have left is flying. Everything else is gone.
Yeah, now, have you ever flown at all?
Pardon?
You ever been in the
air? Yes, I was in the air. I went, I've done a lot of flying when I was younger.
Yeah.
And one time I was in a plane, and the plane dropped 1,000 feet, and the food went in the air, and people were screaming, and, you know, I got real nervous, and it bumped and did all kinds of crazy things. And I got out of the plane. I just couldn't get into another one.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that really scared the heck out of me. But who knows? You know, hopefully I can get in the plane and fly. If not, I'll take like I
usually. Well, you know, you get those air currents, and they do bump around. This time of year, it's not as bad. It's in the summertime when you have all the rainstorms. It's really the worst.
Uh-huh. Right.
It's not as bad, but these, you know, because the temperatures, too, are all up and down, you know. When you get a hot surface and a cold atmosphere, then you start getting a lot of wind going up and down, and that's when you start getting those bumps.
Right.
I personally like them, but some people aren't, because I fly gliders, and you can do a 1,000-foot bump in a glider, and it's really cool. You turn it on the side, you get over a parking lot over here where we fly and get up on top of a big parking lot. And it'll have a lot of lift, and you lay the plane right on its side, so it's at 90 degrees, right? And then you get a bump, and you look at the altimeter, and it goes up 1,000 feet, you know, sometimes if you're lucky. Usually it's 300 or 400 feet.
Then
you get back over the parking lot again and then turn it on its side. You try to spiral it straight up.
That's wild.
It's hard. A little parking lot, it's kind of hard to do. It's a great big old parking lot, like a bunch of shopping centers. You can pretty much stay over all the way up.
Yeah.
You get up to 10, 12,000 feet doing that, you know?
Really?
Yeah. That has to be the right conditions. Normally, like 5, 6,000 is pushing it because the heat starts to dissipate when you get up that high. But you can easily get up 2 or 3,000 feet.
Wow. Amazing.
And then the glider with a 30 to 1 or 40 to 1 forward ratio, you can go a long ways. It only drops 1 foot for 40 feet horizontal.
Fred, how far away is Temecula from the L.A. airport?
It's probably, let me see here. I'm trying to think. It's 40 miles to the Riverside Orange County line and another 20 miles down here, I think. About 60 miles, I guess.
60 miles.
The Ontario airport's much closer if you end up going there.
Yeah, do you drive from Temecula to the city?
We just drive up. It's not that far. You can fly into LAX and grab a shuttle and come down. You know, what day are you coming out? Do you know?
I don't know, Fred, either Wednesday or Thursday or something like that.
Yeah, you just kind of come here then, because we got you a Friday night and Saturday night room already reserved at the Hilton over there.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, so you're covered
Friday
there.
Friday and Saturday. All right.
And then we'll come back down here Sunday night. We pull out early, you know, and get the heck out of Dodge.
Sure. So things are doing good. There's a lot going on in the city here in terms of energy, but it's very powerful here, Fred. We had the guys from Nepal here. I think about 5 or 6 years ago, and they were doing a lot of energy work in the city here, and this is one of the hot spots, believe it or not, on the earth.
Where's that?
We were doing a lot in Rochester, New York.
Oh, Rochester. It's a beautiful town.
Yep. Very, very nice town. A lot of fun.
Rochester and Schenectady are similar, aren't they?
Yes.
Don't they both have the cobblestone streets and all that kind of thing?
No, we don't have the cobblestone. We used to have cobblestone streets, but we don't have them anymore. You've got a good memory.
Yeah, I remember when I go to Eastman Kodak was there in Rochester, and one of the IBM plants that was the how far is it from East Fishkill?
Excuse me?
East Fishkill, New York, is that nearby?
I think it is, but I don't know how far it is, Fred.
Yeah, see,
I think it's pretty
the
close.
IBM plant there. That was one of their chief R&D centers in East Fishkill. And then
wow.
I had Kodak down there in Rochester, and I had a couple others. I had Bell. There was a Bell Laboratories in there. There were some cool companies that I used to visit there all the time. So I was back there quite a bit. So I remember the cobblestone street.
Right.
Little restaurants, and it was, if I remember correctly, there was a few hills in the town. It wasn't just flat.
Yeah.
You had to go up and down hills, and everybody was friendly, and the food wasn't bad.
Very friendly town. Very nice town.
Yeah, the restaurants were pretty good, too, you know, the ones we used to go to.
Yeah, the restaurants are very good here. It's a little bit on the conservative side, Fred.
Yeah.
A little bit on the conservative. It's not liberal as much as I would like it to be, but, you know,
My Confederate war jacket most of the time back there, which I still have. that always got their attention, you know.
It was
kind of a suit, but it was still a Confederate war jacket.
Yeah. You know what I liked last year when I saw you? You were wearing that leather jacket. I think it was a presidential jacket.
Yeah, it's a presidential jacket from Air Force One.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, I got that from
Wow.
And there's the Air Force One hat right there that goes with it.
Wow.
Put it up to the camera so everybody can see it. Yeah,
it was a gorgeous jacket.
Oh, yeah, that jacket's gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's a leather. It's a nice jacket. It's the real deal.
Yeah,
exact.
It's the real deal.
They wear
like
on the plane.
Yeah.
Not a common.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyhow, that's what we do. And anyway, tonight we're gonna, you know, on our Bell show. I mean, George Norrie's show. Such a habit. Man, we gotta cover this book. You should see the questions I had to go over with, and it's fun. I always review it. This book's got so much in it. I gotta with any of my books, I have to review them. You know.
Okay, yeah.
And it was really interesting. You know, getting into the satellite side of it when I was reviewing all of that.
Yes.
It's just amazing how these KH keyhole satellites, there's so many of them now, the series of them, and one of these aircraft magazines released some information that was just barely declassified on how many of these spy satellites are up there. And how they how they work, and how a lot of times they use these ground-based units when they start to pick somebody out,
right?
And then they put this sensor on you, and it's outside your house, could be quite a ways away. And when you're reading, you know, like when you're reading a book, people have a tendency to move their throat. And they actually photograph that movement and observe it and get a pattern off of it. And then they put that in their database. Because the human brain works at 5,000 bits per second, okay? And these new Cray computers, these supercomputers, run at 50,000 bits per second.
Wow.
So what they do is they not only can they get your oral speech patterns and build a library, just like your fingerprint, they also get your reading habit, you know, whenever you're reading and you move your throat, to get that pattern. Plus, now
right.
they can also scan your brain from a distance and get that
right.
pattern. So they can pretty much lock into a person where they are at any given point in time by scanning from a satellite, say, you know, I don't know how many miles up there at their place is classified, but they could scan, let's say, probably a percentage of a city. And, of course, everybody would be generating these frequencies, but they would have yours in that city, regardless
mm-hmm.
if you're in a building or you're outside a building, they
mm-hmm.
can find you. And then
that's
all they
amazing.
Have to do then is track you and zero in and wait. If you're inside a building or something, wait till you come out, and then they can start following you, you know. That's how the technology works.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to know that these receptors and projectors disrupt a lot of that stuff.
That's
you know?
Wonderful.
Yeah, it changes the frequency of it. It's hard for them to read it all. So, there's, you know, it's so funny that when I was reviewing all this stuff today, how we had the foresight to see that this was all coming, you know?
And, right.
And as a result of it all coming, we invented all these things.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And I think I
amazing
told
what they can do.
About how the star orb was created originally. So,
you know, it's amazing how they can pinpoint things that are so fine and finite. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think we have
Hello.
A caller there.
Hello, Dr. Bell.
Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is Mark from Ohio.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you today?
Oh, getting ready to be tired, but I'm fine now.
Okay.
I do a radio show till 2 o'clock
a few
in the
quick
morning.
Questions for you guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I've heard you talk about the New World Order before, and I've often wondered if somewhere at the top of that organization there aren't some kind of ET influence.
Oh, there is. Has been for a long time. You know,
what
the
groups are influencing the New World Order right now?
Huh?
What ET groups are you aware of that are influencing?
Well, there's a lot of them. The Tavistock Institute, which was started in 1921, became the interrogation programs for the CIA and the OSS, which was the pre-CIA, and also for the MI5 and 6 in England, because Tavistock is from there. And so as a result, they set up these reconnaissance programs a long time ago. And then what they would do is they would get these crashed saucers, and so clear back to Roswell, which Dr. Mendoza from Johns Hopkins University turned the term EB, which is 1951, they began to incorporate their technology into our world. I think the Theta Reticulans are the leader of that, and there are several different branches of their species. They're not just a little 3 foot tall. There's some of them that are quite tall and quite smart. So I'd say that the Theta Reticulans are one of the prime movers behind
that. So what is the agenda of these negative ETs?
Well, remember back in the 70s and the 80s, well, actually late 70s, the 80s to early 90s, a lot of implants were going on. And The beginning of the agenda is to get control of the populace, okay? Then that agenda goes into the destruction of its schools and its educational processes, which we're going through now. There was just a big thing on CNN today about, you know, they're passing kids through high school now that only get 25% of the curriculum. In my time, that would have been a big fat F, you know. And these guys get a C at 25% proficiency.
Wow.
That's already in place. The destruction of the religious character of the country is happening. That's why God was pulled out of the equation, because these reptilians don't believe in God. And then the inauguration, the implants became obsolete with this satellite technology that we're talking about now. So implants don't mean anything anymore. They did use a lot of them to create a lot of disruption so that constitutional freedoms could be regulated and you know, set up where we didn't have our Bill of Rights anymore, which is pretty much done. And so the next step, according to top military intelligence, is the arrival of people from outer space. But I got this one guy's name in here. He was the director of Area 51. He's Dr. Get his name here, but got it in my book. He made a comment that the next step would be the inauguration of holograms. And holograms would appear to be UFOs coming from space and possibly even beings, and they would be projections. And so that's kind of the next step, and I think we're getting pretty close to that step now, you know.
And it's I don't want to take up too much of your time. Just one more question. I'll get off here.
All right.
What do you think? Do you think the New World Order will succeed? Do you think their plans will succeed?
No, I don't think it'll succeed at all. I think it's already falling apart for several reasons. One is that the people within the organizations, for example, intelligence groups, NSA groups, national security groups, all have families. And I don't think the families are really benefiting overall from this stuff. The inflation is part of it, and then that's countered by, you know, where we are now with the destruction of the economy and moving that around and kicking people out of their houses and with banks, you know, mortgages. That's part of a disruption process that people are being affected by, regardless of who they are and where they work, whether they're in the intelligence as part of the problem, or they're part of the origination of the problem, or a victim of the problem. It's crossing the lines. Now, why these intelligent people didn't see that or write that in, I don't know. I think from their brotherhood affiliations, they think they can be masters of their own destiny, but they're overlooking one problem, and that is that we evolve around the Pleiadian world in a precession of the equinox, and consciousness changes. And they're starting to look like idiots now, people that do run these programs. Even the simple guy on the street is starting to believe that there's something going on, and that's not going to work in their favor. So to counter that, they pretty much poison the food supply in every way they can. So now, but you see, people... I got smart again, and the common guy will spend a little extra money and go organic. That's not working too good for them. So then they try to lower the standards of what organic is, you know. In other words, something that's not organic, they want to call it that. So that's what goes on. It's a tug-of-war back and forth. But the bottom line is they're going to lose it this time around. They really will.
Well, thanks for your time, Dr. Bell. And I'll go ahead and get off here and listen off the air. I wondered if your partner might send a little positive energy. One of my dogs has cancer, and if he can send any
healing. Oh, yeah,
Steve,
give him a healing. Work with Steve. Steve will work with you for a minute on that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve. Help him out there. One of my birds got cancer, I'd freak out, you know. Got one eating my ear off here right now, but he's quiet. He's a good bird. Yeah. Go ahead, Steve. See what you can do there.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at it right now, and I'm sending a light to the dog now. So,
what kind of cancer does he have?
She has bone cancer. We've been using OxySilver and MMS, and she survived for 7 months in an advanced stage of bone cancer. I'm just
bone
thrilled
cancer?
That she's still around.
Bone, B-O-N-E, bone cancer?
Yes, bone cancer, yes.
Wow,
absolutely.
That's pretty heavy. So it affects her red blood. She got energy because that's going to affect her white and red blood cells dramatically. How is that? Is she able to reproduce red blood cells and keep her, you know, her vital organs up running pretty good?
Well, what I'm doing right now is, sir, if you want to, you can put your dog right there with you?
I can go upstairs and... Yeah.
Well, why don't you go get her? Because I'm sending a lot of energy through her. You'll be able to feel that energy going through her if you go upstairs and feel that.
Okay. I'm getting down right beside her now. It's kind of hard to hear you, but go ahead.
I'm sending energy through your doggy, and she should be able to feel that. Just put your hand on her body anywhere. You'll be able to feel a lot of energy going through her.
She just lifted her head up.
Yeah.
And she's looking now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got my hand on her.
Yeah, can you feel that energy going through her?
I feel some warmth.
Yes, that's it. That's good.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. She loves you an awful lot, by the way.
Oh, I know she does. I love her, too. She's a great girl. She's 11 years old.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Yes. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, listen. Okay, take care of yourself.
Oh, one other thing I might tell you. We've had dogs healthy and unhealthy, and then people put a silver receptor on them, and it helps them a lot.
Silver receptors.
Yeah, and you'd want one for the immune system, you know. I'll tell you real quick before you leave a quick story that happened up in White Mountain, Arizona. I was doing seminars up there by the Honda Indian Reservation, and the lady put the seminars together had a great big Saint Bernard, a big dog.
Yeah.
And that dog was getting real old. I don't know, older than your dog even, and you know it was starting to run down a little bit. So we put. We bought a silver receptor and put a leather chain on it. We took the regular chain off, put a leather chain all around it, you know, a leather strap. Put that receptor on that dog. She wore it for about a month, and then and before I got there, we bailed it. I got there, and I asked the lady, I said, "How's the dog doing with the receptor?" And she says, "The dog loves it." It was a male dog.
Huh.
Loved it. So I decided I was sitting there on her porch before the seminar started. It was in summer. So I went out there and started petting. Actually, it was in the fall, but it was still warm. I started petting the dog, you know, because I always petted it before, long before it had a receptor. I knew it a year earlier. And so now it has the receptor on. I'm petting it, and the dog knows me. And so then I start petting, you know, from the back down on the neck, you know, and then you reach under the neck.
Yeah.
Now, that was okay, but it's a big dog with a large neck. But as soon as I started to get my hand near the receptor, he started to growl, you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And the closer I got to that receptor, the louder the growl got, where the growl was like, you know. And this dog, I never heard it make a sound. So I figured if I'd have gone a couple inches closer, I'd have had a bite on my hand. That dog was not going to allow me anywhere near that receptor.
Wow.
I got about 6 inches from it, and the growling started. I got 4 inches from it, and it was pretty loud. And I knew a couple more inches, and I was going to have a sore arm or something. That's a true story. Strike me dead if I'm lying on that one. And so since then, Mikkel can tell you stories. If you call in during the business hours, she'll tell you all kinds of stories about dogs and cats, too, even mostly dogs, wearing the receptor.
Okay. Thank you very
much. You might
think
about that. You need one of the immune system ones. And you don't need a chain on it. You need a leather strap.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. Have a good evening.
Okay, you too.
Well,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, you never know what you're going to have to do. What a dog is going to do. I mean, or an animal is going to do with a receptor. But
yeah.
They seem to like them. That's the only thing I can say. They seem to like them a lot.
Yeah,
and
that's
great. So anyway, have you worked with a lot of animals? I know you.
I worked with a collie. I worked with a pussycat, and I worked with one of your birds one time. I think she had a broken leg, and we were working on it, and it healed in record time, I think.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, we work with them. My animals now, they've got this energy. They've got the star orb and all the other things around them all the time. So it's pretty cool. You know, it's just really cool how this stuff works. I'm just blessed to be able to to actually, you know, make it and share it with people. That's kind of what we've been doing for the last 35 years.
Yeah, you know, dogs, I mean, you know, I haven't seen your bird. I remember, I think it was a he or she that broke her leg, but I was working with a collie, and she was dying. I mean, she was actually dying. And the last time I saw her, I just called her name, and she actually turned around and looked right at me. I told her I loved her, and she left.
Wow.
And she knew what
That's
I
the planet,
she knew
huh?
what I saying. Yeah, she knew what I was saying.
Wow.
And I had my hands on her. I was healing her and doing the best I can. And but she ended up passing. Her master called me and told me, and I cried. I mean, she was such a beautiful dog.
Oh, yeah. People get attached to their pets.
Yeah.
I know I did. I don't really consider them pets. I consider them more like family.
Absolutely.
But if you've never had a pet, you know, it's hard to relate. You know, like, I get this magazine called Bird Talk,
mm-hmm.
and it's about birds. And before I had parrots, I wouldn't have thought about having a bird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michael
mm-hmm.
Pinder, when we were working with the Moody Blues back in the 70s, Michael Pinder quit the band, and this was at the peak of their career. They were huge then, and he went off to Hawaii. Well, actually, he went to Malibu first, then he went off to Hawaii and raised parrots.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered why he chose parrots over playing music all over the world, and because he quit. I mean, he did music at his house at the Indio Ranch when he was in Malibu, and then he moved off and quit doing music altogether and just did a little writing. And so I ended up... I don't want to tell the story because it's kind of, but I actually met an African gray over at the Hyatt in Hawaii, and that gray,
right,
really attached itself to me really quick, and it was a 13-year-old bird named Delilah, and I just walked up to it, and it told me it loved me, and the other people would walk up to it, you know, in a hotel lobby, it's actually out in the patio, and it didn't like them at all. I was the only one it liked, and I wondered why this bird liked me. And so I ended up getting an African gray, and that's how it all started, you know, to find out why the bird liked me. And the bird then taught me how. I raised it with a bottle, and I still have the bird. The bird's name is Princess. And she's been healthy.
Wow.
All my birds except one have been very healthy, you know.
Yeah.
So that's
so what's
how
happening
goes.
With, you're going to be doing a lot of talking about your book, which I think is a fabulous book,
100%
by the way.
Tonight. Yeah, that's all I'm talking about, but that's a lot. 400 pages of talk here, you know.
Yeah, that'd be really great.
Got a huge following, a huge Ustream. We got over 268 connections on Ustream right now. There's the book.
Wow.
We're going to be on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie at 11
right,
o'clock Pacific.
Right.
Till the wee hours of the morning. I'm just letting all the Ustreamers, because it's picking up, it's building up pretty quick here.
I can
monitor. When you get your computer up and running, you'll see that we can monitor the number of connections.
Yes.
And you can usually triple it from a number of viewers, but because it is a stream. Even on BBS, it's at 56 right now. So,
I had 39 on Saturday night. And was it 39? Oh, it was two Saturdays ago I had 39. And that was a lot of fun. I had some calls, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. You do these big shows, and you get a lot of calls. And you can try to call in. Just go on the Coast to Coast network and just try to call in. Maybe you can get through. That'd be cool if you could talk to me on with George Norrie.
That'd be a lot of fun.
I can introduce you to him anyway. I mean, the luncheon is $150 I had to pay to have lunch with him on Saturday, next Saturday, not this Saturday, but next. So I went ahead and bought a ticket, but George knows me, and I can probably sneak you in. You can say hi to him and everything, you know?
Oh, sure. It'd be cool.
Yeah.
He's a very nice man. You know, he talks very well, and he's very sensitive.
He's very sensitive.
Nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love working with this person. He's one of my favorite people to be interviewed by.
Yeah, he seems to be very sensitive.
Yeah, so we should have a pretty good show.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. I'm going to listen to it. I'll try to call you tonight, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, it's always in the third hour that the calls come in. The first 2 hours
okay.
We're talking about stuff. The last hour is mostly calls.
Yeah.
You know, the wild card and the, I don't know, they got all kinds of names.
Yes.
All kinds of names.
There's going to be a lot of calling you tonight. You know, you have such a great following, so it should be a lot of fun for you.
Yeah, over there, I've always had a pretty good one. I think there'll be a lot of new people because I haven't been on there in 2 years.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking forward to really having some fun.
Well, the book is so interesting. I mean, you know, there's nothing like it. I've never seen anything like it.
Well, it sure stirred up. Let me tell you this, and I got several people that will verify that. Inside Track, this book here,
right,
really stirred up the community. It really, you have no idea.
I can imagine. I can't even imagine
what this book has done, because I just can't, because I have had to actually have countermeasures instituted because of the power of that book.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing like it, Fred. I've never seen another book like it anywhere.
Yeah, and we've got some pretty high-end publishers looking at it now, finally, too. It takes a little time
great.
To get their attention, but when the word travels like this one has, and I haven't sent that many out yet, but it seems to get around pretty good, you know?
Yeah. I think I have number five, or number four. The amazing thing is that all these books are dated. Dated and numbered, and you sign them, your name in them, and it'll become a collector.
Oh yeah,
so that's really great. And
I got a couple of comments here on the pop-up chat room from Ustream. One of them is, let's see, Dr. Fred has found Steve Barish. Awesome. So they were really glad that you were found.
Well, thank you.
You got your regular people. And then another guy wanted to know about what kind of bird Buddy is. He's a male eclectus from the Solomon Islands. And then the last question here is, what are your thoughts on global warming? Well, I'm going to let you answer that first, and then I will answer that.
I think global warming basically is something that is very real, but I think also at the same time is that I don't think it's so much of cars as much as it is the airplanes. I think the airplanes are worse than the cars.
Yeah, there's always...
Go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
I just have a feeling that a lot of it is hype and a lot of it's very real, but I think more it's real, but the hype of it is creating quite a tumult, and I think it's I think it's more political than it is anything else, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I got involved in global warming in, 1975, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as Pyridine was making enough money so I could afford to eat, you know.
Right.
That's about where it was back then. And I think I was still a couple of house payments behind in 75. I think I got caught up in 76. I think the whole year with house payments partially made. But anyway, during that time, I started studying the rainforest, and eventually Sting took that over from the guy from the band Police and set up a rainforest program. It was based on a lot of research that I had done and some he'd done, and he's got the program going because he's the big name, and I'm just a science guy, you know, and So then we did some research on, we found that coal was probably the biggest polluter, coal. And they use it not only just for heating, but it's used in smelting of steel. It's used in a lot of different places. It's not, you know, so it's very, there was, we got into the studies that happened in the Meuse Valley in the late 40s, 47, the Meuse Valley back there, I guess somewhere in New York there, that area, where a lot of people died, like 600 people died of air pollution from the coal and the smog that was creating. So that's when I got into air filtration systems and really started making those, and we invented a bunch of new ones. We sold them all over the place, and we got into all that, and what happened was we discovered that the best way to fix the air was the way that my dad's old boss had done it, and Henry Ford, because Henry Ford had seen the problem. You know, that was before I was born. Norman Miller was Henry Ford's personal physician that delivered me at the Ann Arbor Hospital, University of Michigan Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But he had 18 acres of hemp trees.
Yeah.
For 13 or 4. He had 14 automobiles and 18 acres of, and he ran everything on ethanol. He hated the petroleum industry, literally hated it. And so then I started studying hemp plants, because Henry Ford saw a global CO2 problem. He saw it. And so then he saw that, and so I started studying hemp plants. And a hemp tree will reach fruition in 4 years versus a regular tree never really reaches it. It just keeps growing. Hemp plant will come to, you know, fruition in 4 years and produce four times more oxygen than an ordinary tree. And on top of that, it produces ethanol and, you know, ropes, like they had hemp ropes, you know, on ships, and that lasted 50, 60, 70, 100 years. You know, it didn't rot in water and clothes and all that stuff, and the constitution on it.
Right.
But so why don't we have hemp here? This would fix the problem, you know? And of course, this is where, like you said, big business got involved, and they didn't want any part of it. You can't smoke hemp. It's not marijuana. It's not cannabis. It's a member of the family, but it's, you know, it's just not something that you can do anything with for getting high, and they completely misrepresented it and regulated hemp, and you still don't see much hemp stuff going on. It's slowly coming in.
Well, you know what's really interesting is Mr. Diesel was running Rudolph Diesel on hemp.
Yeah, Rudolph Diesel.
Yeah, he was running it on hemp also.
Yeah, that a diesel engine was made to run on ethanol. And,
yes.
And by the way, if you run a diesel on it, you don't get all that black smoke that you get when you run it on a fossil fuel, kerosene. And of course they don't want, and I'll tell you who's really smart with all this is Richard Branson, because he's setting up in South America and different places hemp plantations to run all of his airplanes at Virgin Airlines strictly on hemp. So his jets don't cause a problem with the smog and shit, you know?
Yeah.
So I thought he's pretty cool, you know. That guy is way ahead. He's already got Spaceship One built.
Wow.
And so he's already going at it. And
the thing I don't like basically is I've got a Toyota Camry, a 4-cylinder Toyota Camry. And when they put that ethanol in the gas,
yeah,
I'm getting almost a third of a tank of gas less in mileage than I was in regular gas.
Yeah, okay. There's a reason for that. One, with ethanol, pure ethanol, you don't need smog equipment. Okay.
Okay.
So you're running. You got all that smog stuff on there, and that's running probably 20% of your horsepower and economy is wasted just running that crap.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know that I have when I put the high test in my Cobra, and they have ethanol in it, I'm getting about 10 miles a gallon compared to 14 miles a gallon. So it's really interesting. It's going to create a little problem for the hot rods this summer, I think.
Oh yeah.
Because they're getting less mileage on their cars. And again, I think it's all political, to be honest with you.
It is totally. Next thing that the industry did is they lowered the compression ratio. In the old days, the cars ran 10, 11, 12 to 1, like my 409 is 11
to 1. Right.
Okay. Cars today run 6 to 7 and 8 to 1. That means they produce a lot of byproducts because of unspent fuel, even with lower. And then, of course, they lowered the octane, too.
Yes.
Simultaneously. And lowering the octane also causes incomplete combustion.
Sorry. I remember this. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so basically, what they've done is done everything they can to make these side markets. And, of course, when Al Gore got up there and started talking about it, it really pissed off a lot of big business people. You know, it pissed them off so much that Bush was, he won the election, but Bush was there. You know, he was put up there. That's how much power these companies have.
Lot of power. A lot of power. I remember in 62, the 409 that I had, was 12.5 to 1, and your Z11 engine in your 62 was 13.5 to 1.
How much?
You know, there was, I think it was 13.5 to 1 your car.
Yeah, maybe it was, as a matter of fact. I think we tuned it down to 11.5.
Did you
for
really?
Some reason. I forget, because of some kind of a camshaft that they put in there, a Sig Ersen or somebody's cam, you know.
You know, it was interesting because in 62, the 409s were 409 horsepower, and people were buying the Z11 heads and putting them on the, putting it in the 62 409 and the cam from the Z11, and boy, they upped their horsepower tremendously.
Yeah.
And you couldn't catch them.
Oh, no. So the Z11 put out about 550 honest horsepower, I think, at the time.
Right.
But you could easily get that one. I think we were getting about 900 out of mine with the lower pistons and a different cam, and we did a little porting and polishing and stuff. But we used that high, that manifold, that valley cover. You had to have a valley cover and that intake manifold set up. You could put your fist underneath the intake manifold.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. But anyhow, it's interesting how they were using hemp and the diesel engines, and it was making such a difference.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know what else is interesting is that diesel is cheaper to make than gasoline, and it's more expensive than gasoline.
Oh, I know. It's ridiculous. You know, in the cracking process, diesel fuel occurs at the lowest stage of heat, and therefore there's more of it. Whereas the higher temperatures of the cracking process is where the higher octanes go.
Yeah.
Somebody asked about wave conjugation, but that has to do with lasers and weapons and stuff, but I can't get into that tonight.
Trying to
think if I wrote about that. I think I wrote about that in my Rays of Truth book a little bit when I was talking about scalar wave warfare. We got into that a little bit. It's an interesting topic. And the way the weapon is produced out of that process in its perfect state, it's a healing process, but in an unperfect state, it becomes a beam weapon.
Amazing.
And that's by interfering. It's setting up an interference pattern at the conjugating point. In other words, the point where the waves split after you've allowed the waves to bond together. As far as I want to go with that, that's a hot topic, and I don't really want to do that one tonight. But yeah, we're up at 5:55, so we're about done here. Do you want to tell everybody about your show?
Yeah, my show is on Saturday night. It's Steve Barish Healing Hour,
and it's on at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Time. And we do a lot of talking about the projectors and receptors and nuclear receptors and the projector, the wall projectors. So if anybody wants to listen in, and we also do a lot of healing, so please listen in.
Yeah, that'll be good. And our phone number here is 1-800-729-2603. If you call in after the George Norrie show, we have a system here that will record your call, and we will get back to you. It might be a while because we get a few calls here and there, maybe 50, maybe a couple of minutes sometimes. Depends on the show, maybe no calls, but usually we have quite a few for a couple of weeks. We always get back to everybody. We always do, 100%. So be sure and leave your information if you don't get a live person. And chances are you won't, because you guys know when you call into that show, you can't call in, and I can't even get in there, and I've been on it many times. So my website is www.pyridine.com, and you can just type Dr. Fred Bell in the search engine and find out a little bit more about what we do. I know we're getting a lot of newbies again. We always do this time of year, and that's always fun. And that's 1-800-729-2603, and we start at 11 o'clock tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Again, for 3 hours. And when you check that out, you go to their website, regardless if you're in Canada or the islands or here, there'll be a radio station that you can listen to the show on. And if not, it's on the internet too. So that's kind of how it goes. So where are you almost back to your place now or what?
I'm just back on 490, so I'm doing pretty good. I should be home in about 20 minutes or so.
So you can actually do a radio show while you drive.
Yeah.
You got your computer hooked up?
I have the computer hooked up, but we have a problem. The I think it's in the wiring coming in from, not from the street, but the box that has, Fred, I'm not familiar with this, is not working properly. That's what the guy told me. So now I'm waiting for the telephone people to come over to fix the damn thing. Pardon my French.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
You know, it's not in the computer. It's in this box, and it doesn't come on properly. One channel is off, and the other comes on, and it's driving me crazy.
Wow. All right, we got a blowout, Steve. Call in tonight. Good luck.
I will do that.
You've been listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show, brought to you by the Loving, Caring, Taking Care of Birds Foundation tonight. Buddy Boo is president right here on my shoulder. Catch us next Thursday. Hey, Buddy Boo. Yeah, Boo, you know your name. All right, you guys out there in the...